This is Conversations with Candidates. I'm your host, Cal Halliburton. It's our pleasure today to be talking with Jackie Norris. Mrs. Norris is seeking the Democratic Party nomination as a candidate for the United States Senate for Iowa. She grew up in Ossining, New York, where her father was a teacher and her mother a school nurse. She earned a bachelor's degree at State University of New York at Geneseo, and later earned a master's degree and got her teaching license at Iowa State University. In 1988, Norris moved to Iowa to work on Tom Vilsack's campaign for governor. During the 2008 Iowa caucuses, she helped lead Barack Obama's campaign, and from 2009 to 2011, she served as chief of staff for First Lady Michelle Obama. Norris also served as executive director of the Corporate Institute at the nonprofit Points of Light, created by George H.W. Bush, and as a senior advisor to the Corporation for National and Community Service. From 2016 to 2020, Norris was president and CEO of Goodwill Industries of Central Iowa, where she worked to raise the minimum wage of its employees to $15 an hour. She is currently the owner and president of Horizon Group, an Iowa-based marketing research firm. Her motivation to run for the Senate comes largely from her experiences as a classroom teacher, a school board member, and as the CEO of Goodwill, where she saw the need for strong family support agencies. Norris and her husband, John, have three sons, all currently attending college. Well, Jackie, please tell our listeners something about yourself they'll not find on your website or with a search engine.
Wow, that's a great question. Well, I guess what I would love to tell you is that I am a outdoorsy person at heart. I don't know how many people know that about me. I love hiking and fishing and canoeing and camping. And usually if you are really looking hard and you can't find me, I might be at White Rock Conservancy.
I assume you've been traveling a bit around the state. And as you travel and talk with people, what are their most important concerns?
Yesterday, I happened to have the opportunity to be by Lake Red Rock and then in Grinnell and then at Fort Dodge. And I would say there's three common themes. One is concern about our democracy and the state of government and where we are. The second is around affordability of costs. And it sounds differently depending upon who you're talking about. For some, it might be the price of ground beef at Fairway. For others, it might be about childcare. For others, it's healthcare and the potential subsidies increasing. And then, you know, as a teacher, I talk about education. I elevate issues like youth mental health and cell phone and social media addiction. And those resonate with people. And so, you know, those are on the minds of a lot of people right now, especially working parents.
Assume you're elected. What are your top priorities and what actions would you take to implement them?
As the daughter of a 91-year-old dad, who we recently moved him into a nursing home, I have been reflecting a lot on the word caregiving and caregivers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have a lot of paid and unpaid caregivers that have supported us from birth to death. So, you know, think about the child care associate, or think of the CNA, think of the paraeducator who works with individuals, kids with disabilities. Think of the home health aide or the nursing home aide. All of those individuals are caring for us. And what we know about those individuals, they're predominantly women, and typically they're making maybe $15 an hour. Often they're not receiving benefits. They don't have workplace flexibility. And one of my commitments is for the people who care for us, we have to make sure that they can care for their family. And so that looks like a couple of things. Obviously, increasing a wage to a far more competitive wage so they can afford to pay for childcare and not just survive, but thrive. It means making sure that they all have access to high quality benefits, which may mean, right, the big beautiful bill cuts on Medicaid probably aren't helping because they may live in rural communities and need access to health care. And so it's not just making sure that they have benefits, it's making sure that they have access to high quality health care where they live. And then I think the third thing is, it is very physical work, the work of caregiving. And the reason I bring this up is because these are jobs that AI is not going to take away anytime soon. And if we don't elevate the importance of the profession, much like the way we're talking about teachers and education, we are going to find ourselves at a crisis point if we're not already at a crisis point now. And so that is one of probably three core issues that I will elevate and get something done on in the Senate.
I know that the county hospitals in this state are having difficulty continuing.
Cal, I'm really glad you actually just gave that example because one of the things that I've been talking about, kind of rural resilience and having a rural resilience strategy, is that the Medicaid cuts are going to have ripple effects. So it's not just the individual who can't receive Medicaid services, it's the people that work at the hospital, it's the people who do the landscaping, just like you talked about, right? It's the Main Street that provides the lunches to the people who go to the hospital. And so I think it's really important when we're looking at these cuts that we're not just thinking about them as like an individual cut, because it's far more broader to rural healthcare. And if you don't have rural healthcare and you don't have a high quality public school, then there is not a strong pull for people to want to live there, which makes it very difficult for a state that is an agricultural state.
What's your position with regard to immigration in this country?
I don't think anybody in this country questions that we should have a safe and secure border. I think what we need is a pragmatic approach to supporting immigrants, both their entry, but also the people that are living here in our towns, right? That are either attending our schools or running a business on Main Street, right? Or working at the hospital. I think our approach has to be that for people that are here, if they're here illegally, they are still or undocumented. They're human beings. They have, if they're paying taxes, they've embedded themselves into their community. We're not talking about criminals, right? We're talking about people who pay in their taxes, going to church, kids are in school, they're high functioning members of the community. Just create a pathway for them to be able to become citizens or have the right to live in our country. And because it is, you could argue it's an employment imperative, it's a financial, it's an economic imperative. It's also the right thing to do. And so that's how I would approach the process of making sure that we address that issue in the Senate. And I do think it's important to celebrate. There are great examples in Iowa where communities have thrived. So look at Storm Lake or look at Perry or look at Marshalltown. And so that to me is just so wonderfully vibrant. And we should want to be exposed to that and to celebrate that culture.
Water quality and water access. What are we going to do on a national level as well as a state level to deal with the water quality? And it's not just nitrates in the water, which we have a big problem with.
What I appreciate about this question is one of the things I've said a lot lately is, isn't it the job of our federal government to have a vision and a plan on insert, right? Affordable housing, on aging, on, X, Y, or Z. And I think this is yet another example where there is not a broad vision of the whole country and how we are going to support our water issues, because some is access, some is quality. I think the starting point has got to be that everybody who lives, in this case, in Iowa, has a right to access clean water, right? To drink, to swim, and to fish in. And so you have to start with that as the human right, and then build from there. In Iowa specifically, what I would say is that we have an imbalance right now because we have high nitrate rates, and some people are correlating that to high cancer rates, and so there are serious health risks that are being elevated. At the same time, we have a farm bill and a farm policy that has not been updated since before COVID, that is stuck focusing on quantity over quality in terms of production. And we right now are seeing, like, the China market's not available for product. Food diplomacy is not available for product. And so it is going to require a rethinking of agriculture across the country, but in Iowa specifically, because what's happening right now is that our water is being impacted and our water quality is being impacted. And so any solution is going to have to include both conservation leaders and farmers, and innovation to think about what are we going to do with the amazing soil that we have in the state? What is going to produce something that is going to, have markets to sell? And then what are the requirements that we're going to expect people if they're receiving subsidies? What requirements should they be held to for federal dollars? We do it with Medicaid. Medicaid now has work requirements, so we should expect the same thing.
There's another issue, of course. Some people call it a woman's right to her own body and being able to govern what happens to you. I assume you have a position there.
Look, I mean, I go to my doctor, and the discussions I have with my doctor are the discussions that inform choices I make about my body, right? And, I mean, it is choices around, what to do regarding, abortions, things like that. That's got to take place between a doctor and the woman. I mean, I wish I could come up with an equivalent, but I think about lots of other people that go in and have conversations with their doctors about other issues, and that's a decision between a medical professional and the patient. And that's the way I'll continue to approach that, because that is, and I think that's a common sense position where most women in this country are right now.
Another that might something to do with gun control. Surely there's a common sense approach.
It's interesting. This is it's such a personal question, right? I mean, I support the Second Amendment, and I look at this through multiple lenses. So, our kids hunt. They were grew up hunting. My husband's a hunter. We own guns, and that's part of, I don't know, life on the land. I approach this from the mindset of a mom who's got two kids that are training to be war fighters. So they're trained to use military assault weapons, and I entrust that they have the training they need to make decisions on how to use a weapon like that. I also approach it as a school board member, right? I mean, when kids walk through our doors, what we have to know is that they are going to be safe, and we will do everything we can to take care of them. So, that means if you have a law enforcement professionals who have guns, that is how we approach it. But other than that, guns don't belong in schools. So I think it is really you use the term common sense. I think it is all about balance. And I think everybody's so quick to black and white what your position is, and it is nuanced. It is not black and white.
I want to thank you very much for sharing your time with our listeners. You've been listening to Conversations with Candidates with Ms. Jackie Norris, who is seeking the Democratic Party nomination for the United States Senate for Iowa.